Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 570 for comics originally released on July 11th, 2018, or thereabouts. We're actually breaking from our format just a little bit. Normally we do a DC, a Marvel, and some other book, but because of Comic-Con and logistics and time travel and so forth, we're actually doing all independents, or all non-Marvel DC, I guess would be the way to say it.
Definitely.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do them in alphabetical order by publisher. And starting us off is Relay number 1 from Aftershock.
Yes.
Now, we've got a press PDF of this, and very nice of Aftershock to make that available and such. Very handy for them to put the diamond code, and hey, here's how to go order it and such. They've got a watermark on this.
Yeah, which on the first few pages.
I think through all of them, it's just less obvious later. It's a shame they feel they need to do it, but man, I get it.
Yeah, I can imagine some people would get this thing and load it onto a Dropbox or load it onto a website, a scan thing, and just rip it off. So you want to have that on there, I guess. But it does kind of mess it up a little bit for us.
Yeah, it's one of those where between that, there were a few pages, I think, either it was a lower res PDF than I was expecting. There's a couple of things where I had to give a little bit of an allowance for just the visual on the thing, particularly with the watermark. But to me, that's the state of the world we live in, not a knock on them whatsoever.
And definitely,
I appreciate, again, when publishers make it easy to do advanced reviews of their stuff.
Yeah, and Aftershock's been very forthcoming with getting review copies and trying to help get the word out there to read their books, because they do have a lot of good stuff out there. Now, before we got started, there was one thing that I found very interesting on this. This was written by Zach Thompson. We've reviewed some of his books. He's becoming more and more prolific out there. He's a newer writer, but more and more stuff popping up. Artist Andy Clark. But then it has Donnie Cates on here as a writer too, but I don't know. Was he just collaborating with the idea? I don't think he wrote this.
I'm not sure. I was just scanning.
At the top,
I was scanning through looking for a credits page, and I'm not actually seeing one in the PDF.
Yeah, we're kind of missing that, so that's where I didn't really know. I don't know if he was just like maybe the concept, and then Zach Thompson did the plot, but this didn't read like a Donnie Cates book, per se.
I would agree with that.
Not in a bad way. It didn't sound like his voice when I read it.
Exactly. It's not better or worse. It's just certain authors and stuff have a particular tone of voice or whatever, and it didn't have that feel to it.
Definitely.
This is one that, honestly, when I get the print copy, because I did pre-order this, I am going to reread.
I agree. I will reread this for a third time because I want to see it in the print format and see how it looks. I mean, even though I have one of those iPad Pros and it's really nice, it's huge to look at, I want to get a feel because we didn't have all the pages colored in this press PDF either.
Right. Only the first couple of pages were colored. And then from there, there were a few where there seemed to be on a couple of pages a little bit more kind of, and maybe it's my imagination, low-res artifacts or whatever of the line work. This, I think, will pop a lot. Well, it's funny because there's one page where most of the art is black and white, but then there's a sound effect in color.
Exactly. So I don't know if it's going to be black. I got to see what's going on because, like you said, the text box is some of the, you know, the dialogue. It's in like a yellowish background. It's weird.
So I'm curious how much of this is a stylistic thing, how much of it's supposed to be black and white, full color, or what. There were aspects of this I liked, there were aspects of this I didn't like. The concept was interesting. Man, there is a ton of expositional captions in this comic.
Oh, yeah. They are building a world here. And it seems like they're trying to build this to be a major title for Aftershock.
And I think it's got that potential, but it felt like once we get on to this spaceship and they're kind of going off to places, it flips from a comic book to, and it's only a couple of pages, I guess, but an illustrated story with captions giving us the exposition, setting up the premise and all of that.
Yeah.
But it felt like a lot of this issue was set up, not payoff.
Yes, yes. it felt like it was building the world, and the world was interesting enough that I want to know more, and I want to know about this story inside of here. And there is a tease of a story that it left me hungry for it. But like you said, this particular issue, there wasn't a ton that happened. It was more world building.
Yeah. And leaving hungry, I think is a good way to put it. I like the taste of it. I want more of it, but I'm not sold on it. And
yeah,
I've pre-ordered the second, but I haven't yet had the chance to pre-order the third. I'm not sure if it's in the July previews or not, but as we record this in the past, or as they listen to it in the future, whatever, maybe people have more information. So confusing.
Yes.
But I want more of this. The second issue will give me more. Like I said, I'll reread this issue when it's in print just to give it a fairer shake. Because even the black and white pages, you can still kind of sort of make out the watermark. It's just way less obvious there.
Yeah. I was originally reading some of those black and white pages, and I thought that maybe there were some pencils that didn't fully ink it. And then I realized, oh, no, that's the watermark. It is on the black and white pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just thinking they didn't ink it properly. I was like, what's going on with this stuff?
The art's pretty good. The story's interesting. Yeah. It just got off, it got off to a slow start.
Yeah, and this is a story that I think some people will love. Some people it might be, but I really liked it. Some people may be a little bit iffy on it because it deals with almost like religion and colonization and forcing ideas upon others. And I like the concept, but there's some people out there who are going to think it's a preachy, but it's not preachy to me because it's completely different. It's not us. It's not our beliefs. It's not our ideas. It's not our history. It's looking at these characters and this world's history. And so you're able to pull yourself outside and look at what maybe has happened in our country or parts of our planet from a different perspective.
Well, and that was what I liked. It had some cool ideas that it tossed out there. I would have liked to have maybe dived in a little deeper. And it's got that kind of manifest destiny of the whole galaxy is you know, belonging to us. We just need to let them know sort of mentality. So it was fun. It was good. I just was hoping to come out of this sold a bit more on it than I was.
Yeah, I know what you mean because it's so weird because it made me want more and more and more. But at the same time, it was a little bit unfulfilling as far as what happened in the story.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to explain that.
It spent too much time setting up the premise and getting to kind of that initial plot point, maybe. Or getting to where it's getting to. It's not even at, necessarily.
Yeah. And if they color these pages, the art in here, the line work, I think, is very crisp, very clean. And for an Aftershock title, I think this is one of the better artists that they've had on Aftershock books.
I would kind of agree with that, not that I've read that many Aftershock books. I think they have good writers and artists by and large. They've got good production values. Sometimes art style is not to my liking, but this one clicked with me. They just have such a diversity of material that there are other publishers. If you like one thing, you're probably going to like most of what they do. Aftershock, because they're going in so many different directions, and that's a good thing to have that level of diversity, I don't get a lot of their books.
Yeah, I understand. Like, I was just talking about how I just started buying the bundle from Eric at Cowabunga with everything. But then on this month, when the previews came out for the next order cycle, there was one of them on there. I was like, man, I really don't think I want to read this. And that's where it's like, it's kind of dangerous. Do I drop the bundle and just pick up all these other? I got to price it out and see if it makes sense because I don't want to just have something just to have it and take up space, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I get that.
If it's cheaper to get the bundle, I'll get the bundle.
To me, that's the deciding factor.
Exactly. It comes down to the price because, honestly, I don't need any more space-taking stuff.
I can relate to that. I have a lot of space-taking stuff. Very little of my stuff takes no space.
Now, the premise of this is there is a gigantic, big thing in the city. It's like a big, a blisk, almost, standing up in the city. That they call the Relay. And there is almost a religious cult or following or belief system that goes around this. And there's a person, and his name, I'm trying to remember, is Hank Donaldson, which these people who are almost like acolytes of the Relay, they're always searching for Hank Donaldson, who's been hidden, you know, and they're always searching for him. Just very weird stuff that's in here, but it's super cool at the same time.
I kind of think this Donaldson fellow is just a regular guy, and this religion around him or whatnot came out of some sort of misunderstanding.
And that's what I wonder if they're playing on, you know, like the religious beliefs that we have. And maybe some stuff is misunderstanding. I'm not saying that to offend anyone, but like you could see how maybe it's not directly tied to anything we believe in, but like how things can be misconstrued, and like the old telephone game, you know, where you whisper something to someone and they tell someone something and they tell someone something, and how everything gets distorted over time. And if you take that with one character and maybe a belief system or things that have been passed down, how you can almost build a religion off that, or you can build a belief system off that. And then how this is being spread throughout the universe or the worlds out there.
Exactly. Imagine if Steve Wozniak had dropped off an early, you know, Macintosh or something 20 years earlier or something. And they're like, the great Woz gave us this. You know?
A complete religion was built around it.
Yeah. Or crazier, you know, Bill Gates goes back and accidentally leaves his Zune or something in the past. And it's exactly. The Zune from the Gates, you know, kind of a thing.
Exactly. And then you have people, zealots, who want to militantly spread this belief in the great Wozniak or the Zune. But I mean, you could see how stuff like that could happen. And I think that's what they're going with the story, is they have a cool sci-fi world and they're dealing with those types of things in this, which is such a cool premise to me. And I think it's something that needs to be spoken of. And they did it in this setting in a way to not offend anyone.
Absolutely. And this Donaldson guy could be the real deal. He may have actually put this relay out there and has an agenda, etc. So we don't know yet, but that's cool.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm just like, I'm so weird with this book, because like you said, there's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of world building. And this is something that tickles my fancy. And I don't know what it is, but it seems something that I just want more.
I'm at the point where I'm probably going to pre-order number 3. Not 100% certain, but it's most likely going to happen. But I need to read this again in the full release with the color and stuff. And I want to see number 2. I want to see where it's going. I want to get a better sense. I think I'll stick with it through the end, but we'll find out.
Definitely. If any of you guys are thinking about reading it out there, definitely check it out. I know Eric will give you a killer deal, especially on the first issue at least. And then from there, you can decide on your own. But it just has some cool cultural, social overtones, but done in a non-offensive way into a cool sci-fi package, which was really awesome for me.
Yeah, it's good sci-fi type stuff. And is this going to be a miniseries or ongoing?
That I don't know, because in the solicits it didn't say a miniseries. And some of the Aftershock books, when they've hit, like I'm trying to think about that one, Animosity.
Mm-hmm.
It originally had like the first, like, let's say, so many issues, and then it's done so well, they've had spinoff series, it's come back for more issues. So they kind of put them out there and they test them for like 12 issues or so, 6 to 12. And then if it really catches on, which this one should catch on, they're going to expand. They'll probably take a little break and then they'll come back with the next 12-issue arc.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but this is one of the better Aftershock books. And there are quite a few that are really good.
Yeah. The ones I've read, I've enjoyed and such. There's just a few that are in areas I'm not really interested in stories in that area.
Which is understandable, and not everything's for everyone.
Yeah, and I appreciate that they've got that diversity. I think it's good, because people who aren't interested in what I like need stuff to read, too.
Exactly. Like, one of the things they published, which I did not like, was Marguerite Bennett. She wrote Insects. I-N-S-E-X-T-S, like Insects with a T-S. And it was like these creatures that kind of like... you know, like would come on to guys and start to mate with them and then kill them. Like their little insect arms would pop out and kill them. But something about it just, it sounded cool, but it was just like, it just didn't hit a chord with me. So I dropped it.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like it's for me either.
Exactly. Just, I don't know what it was. And just reading that premise, it sounded cool, but just not for me.
And sometimes the premise is enough to get you in the door. Does it keep you is the thing.
Exactly. And this one did. So what are you giving this book?
I'm going to go with a B- on this one.
And I liked it more than you. As you can probably tell by my demeanor and my tone, I went with an A- on it.
A-. Wow. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. And it struck me as topics that I think that need to be spoken about in a non-offensive way, which there are no comics that are doing that right now.
I agree with all of that. I just had hoped it would get a little further into the story than I felt it did.
Understandable.
With that, shall we move on to our next book?
Yeah, definitely.
This is Yosagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, number 4 of 7 from Dark Horse. This, of course, is a 7-part miniseries starring Yosagi Yojimbo. I read 1 through 3 right before reading number 4.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a little disclaimer here. I have never read Stan Sakai or Yosagi Yojimbo ever before. So this was my first comic, and I knew that coming in, starting at issue number 4 is not a very smart thing, but I wanted to review it when you mentioned it was coming out because I already picked up the whole Fantagraphics omnibus series that came out with a paperback. It, based on people on the Slack channel and hearing you guys review stuff by Stan Sakai in the past, that I wanted to, I'm just going to read it in a big chunk from the get-go. And so I was really interested to see what this is because I haven't even received that omnibus that I ordered yet. So this is the first thing I've read.
I've got the 2-volume slipcase that was done, I think, by Fantagraphics or whatever. And then I've got trades from the Dark Horse stuff, I think. Because I knew about this title back in the 80s when it started up. Okay, I had a high school friend who read it, loved it, and that's one of those comic buying decisions if I had to do over again, I would do differently. And there aren't many of those. I would have started picking it up back then. I did not get onto this until around issue 117 back around 2009.
Oh, wow.
So fairly recently, you know, granted it's a decade ago now, but still.
Yeah, but so you're I guess newer, I could say 9 years. I'm completely new, so I am a Yosagi virgin. So but you know what, reading this, I'd seen the art online when I was looking at like trades through Amazon. You can see a preview because I just want to see what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was a cartoony art, but the writing is not a cartoony writer. And so I kind of appreciated it. And it's really cool seeing that this guy's doing the whole package and doing the whole thing, kind of like, you know, Strangers in Paradise or something, but with a samurai, a ronin, rabbit, and anthropomorphic characters. And I actually enjoyed it. I just was a little bit, I didn't have the frame of reference as far as the context of what was going on before this.
That's fair. That's understandable. Obviously, this is one story arc through the 7 issues, at least so far. It's a police procedural. It's, as you mentioned, anthropomorphic animals, and it's set in late 16th, early 17th century Japan.
Yep, feudal Japan.
And this is literally, it's not normally a police procedural. It's normally just a traveling ronin and his adventures. But here, Yosagi is helping out his friend, Inspector Ishida, I think it is, solve this case.
And so this is not a normal Yosagi type thing.
It's not an abnormal one either, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
If I were to do a high-level elevator pitch for kind of how Yosagi seems to operate, keep in mind there's 116-plus issues I haven't read, so could be wrong on this. I would put him down almost as a MacGyver kind of a character. Not that he's the inventor and the gadget type guy, but the perennial do-gooder who gets mixed up in adventures just as the course of his life. He sees somebody who needs help, he helps them. He's got a code of honor. He's got that kind of a thing. So he's known this inspector over the years. Ishida is doing some stuff. He's there. He can help. He helps. You know, it's always been a little unclear to me exactly how Yosagi, you know, makes ends meet. But apparently it's a fairly, you know, simple lifestyle he's got. And he makes enough from helping people out that, you know, he doesn't really have any standing bills. He'll go camp out in the middle of nowhere for the night if he needs to, type thing.
Definitely. I mean, I thought it was really cool that, you know, he's a ronin in the character and in the book. And so I guess at one time, I appreciate that at the very front of this, they give you a breakdown about like the close of the 16th century, what's going on and what happened in the previous issue. That helped me get up to speed. But it was nice knowing that, you know, his lord had been killed in another series. That might have been the Fantagraphics series. I honestly don't know. But apparently at some time that was addressed. Because, yeah, if you lose the guy that you follow, you basically are Ronin. You don't have a master at the time. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, he's almost like I wouldn't say a Batman, but he's a do-gooder. He's a Robin Hood that goes around and helps people.
Kind of like the Equalizer or any other of a zillion TV movie-type characters we've known over the years.
Yeah, so it's really kind of cool.
What was interesting is when I was reading them all back-to-back, the first issue really set up kind of the death of the people they're investigating and who got this box that they're chasing down and all this kind of stuff. And there were aspects of it that at the end of the first issue, it's like, oh, well, we figured this out. The beginning of the second issue, they're kind of doing a recap. And I'm sure if you read them in a trade, it's like, but you just said that a page or two ago. But now it's a month later in terms of when the readers are theoretically getting it off the rack. Or for me, many months later since I picked them up, but all read them all at once. But you get the idea.
Exactly.
it's a same sort of technique they'll do at the before and after commercial break. They'll lead up to one with a reveal, and they'll kind of recap the reveal sometimes after the commercial break. Oh, yeah, that's where we left off. Before seeing, you know, an interminable number of commercials to sell us cars and soda and what have you. So doing that between issues goes towards accessibility, and he tries to get it to where you've got the basic idea of what's going on over the course of an issue, even if you've skipped the previous ones.
Oh, yeah, I skipped it all, and I read this, and although I didn't know exactly what was going on, I knew who the characters were. I knew he was a generally good alignment character. I know that there's an inspector. I know that there's a crime going on. So I kind of figured that all out, so it was accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that, because some books you pick it up, and I'd be like, what's going on? And they don't even say the character's name sometimes in the book.
I've had a couple I've been reading the whole title, and I get to an issue, and I'm not sure what's going on. I hate that.
I know. You're like, who is this person again?
I liked how this fit the tone and style of Usagi, and yet was almost a transplant of a police procedural into the comic. Okay. It worked for me on both scores.
Yeah, this was a good read. It made me happy with my purchase. I got the paperback slipcover, you know, omnibus thing, and I'm looking forward to reading all this back history and learning more about this character, and I want to pick up the Dark Horse trades. I just got to wait till I get some more cash.
I can understand that. I, again, have had those sitting on my shelf for a few years now. At some point, I'll get to them. I'm looking forward to it, too. It's just finding the time. What I will say is, over the years I've been reading, there is a consistency in terms of quality, in terms of story quality, art quality, and I'm not trying to suggest that Sakai hasn't gotten better. It's that it's not like a radical departure in style or something over the years. If you like it at any one point in time, you could probably pick up any other issue and like it just as much.
Which is good to know, because I'm picking up the earlier work, so it's nice to know that I'll be able to pick it up and I'm not going to be like time warp back to reading his writings off or the drawing doesn't look very good.
I'm basing that off what I've read over the last decade. I haven't gone all the way back the 20, 25 years or however long the character's been out, so hopefully that holds true that far back. I've got to imagine it does.
I'm going to call you out on the next episode. just kidding.
Either way, let me know, because like I said, I haven't gotten around to reading that stuff. He's been doing this for, like, again, 25, I think, plus years. It's insane.
Which is just insane, and this is the only thing that he's really been working on, and he's built this character, and he has, I almost want to say, a rapidly loyal fan base, because people who like Usagi, they preach the how much they like Usagi, and you have to read it. And then that happened to me on the forums. I'm like, man, I feel kind of inadequate because I haven't read this stuff. I got to pick it up. And I just went whole hog all in.
This is definitely what he's best known for. It's not the only project he's been doing over that time.
Oh, what else does he do?
He is, I believe, the letterer for Gru.
Oh, okay. So just lettering, though.
I believe so. I think he started with lettering and got to where he was comfortable enough with his art to actually go tell his own stories. But he also, this, Stan Sakai is not only associated with Usagi, but like I said, Gru. The other thing is Usagi is associated with the Turtles, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's crossed over with them a couple of times.
That's true. I remember seeing that there were some crossover books like that. I haven't read those, of course.
Including showing up in the cartoons.
Oh, really?
There have been even a couple of action figures of Usagi because of the Turtles stuff.
So he's become really popular over the years.
He has. What's even cooler, Usagi's been optioned for an animated series.
Really? For like with a, is it going to be like coming out on Netflix or what is this?
I don't know where or when it's coming out. I only found a little information about it. I think it's going to be a computer animated sort of a thing.
So cool.
But yeah, if they can capture the tone and the style, I love this because I'm learning a little about this era of Japan and stuff over the course of these things. Because he'll toss a couple of you know, footnotes here and there of, you know, this term means this, this means that.
Exactly. I mean, I even liked how they were like talking about how there was the spread of Christianity is illegal at this period in Japan, which is true. It really was. But how this Inspector Ishida is actually a good guy. He's like, I don't want to get someone in trouble just because their beliefs are different than mine, which is really cool. It makes you think he's a good guy.
Well, and it gives us some insight into his character.
Exactly. So this is, even though I would say the drawings are cartoonish, like I said, it's not written for the young reader. It's written for the older audience.
Yeah.
I don't think a kid would appreciate this.
I think he could enjoy it. I don't think he'd appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't appreciate it like an older reader would.
Yeah. The first issue actually had a text piece in place of a letter column that was, here's the history, early history of Christianity and why they were in the state they were in this story.
Oh, okay. And I missed that. I just have this. Yeah.
So I thought that was really, you know, educational for me. I found it interesting. It was really cool.
Oh, that's awesome. And one thing I also appreciated that he did, he is another writer. He went cover to cover. So he gives you that little recap at the front. There's 24 pages of story in here, and the back cover has another little story. So he uses everything in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I appreciate. You know, if you're charging $3.99, he's giving you plenty of reading material. It took me a while to read it, so I liked it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. There was one thing at the end where there was an image that I didn't really get the meaning of, and it seemed to make a difference, potentially. It seemed to be a story point that was lost on me. But presumably, when it comes to fruition next issue, it'll get explained.
Okay, yeah, and I looked at, I didn't know what that was either. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I looked at that, and I didn't know what that meant.
I'm sure it means something. I just have no idea what yet. But it's a fun read. I think he's got a fairly well-realized world for Usagi over the years. He's a cool character. I like some of the people he hangs with. This is a series I definitely recommend. Like I said, I got on this series far, far too late. And at some point, I need to find the time to go read the hardcovers and trades and really get fully up to speed on the character.
Cool.
So for me, I'm going with an A- on this.
Oh, all right, cool. For me, not having context, I feel like I wasn't able to give this as fair an evaluation as I could have, and shame on me for that. But at the same time, I was able to enjoy it just picking up this issue, which speaks to the writing and the accessibility of the book. If it weren't for your recommendation and some other people on the Slack channel, I would have never looked at this, never given it a try. And now I'm in whole hog, and I guarantee on the next miniseries, I'll be picking it up in singles. I just didn't want to start at issue 4 or issue 3, but I figured we could give this a review. I enjoyed this enough to where it made me happy with going in, and it made me want to investigate the character and the Dark Horse stuff. I already picked up the Fantagraphics stuff. And I went with a solid B just because I was not aware of certain things, and so I was a little bit confused, and that's more on me than on the writer.
Well, I mean, coming in dead center of a 7-issue miniseries and being able to give it that kind of a rating, I think does say something good, because you're never going to have the full context of the story. There were 3 issues before it.
Oh, yeah. It was, I'm completely blind, and he kept me entertained, which spoke to the writer.
Yeah, you got a sense of the story. And there are a lot of things, if I were to jump into the middle of almost any Marvel DC 6-issue arc or something, I'm willing to bet I'd be a little lost.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Be like, what's going on? Who's this? Yeah, it would be very confusing. As you said, in the first issue that we reviewed the other day, or actually, I guess it would have been 2 weeks ago when this comes out, they didn't even mention some of the characters' names, and it was a first issue on Multiple Man, which is just no accessibility there. And I like Stan Sakai. He mentioned every character's name that needed to be mentioned, and he gave you background on the characters, and he even did some character development in one little issue in the middle, which I liked.
Yeah, he does a great job. He's also a great person. If you have the chance to meet Stan Sakai at a convention, and he does do many convention appearances, I highly recommend it. He's cool.
I'll have
guy.
To meet him.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great material. I went to a convention, this was a good number of years ago, here in Austin called Staple, and it's a small press kind of a thing. And this was like the big book that they had kind of represented there. It was at a place that had a banquet room kind of thing set up as a dealer room and another as an artist one, but it had a theater. And he was at the front of the theater drawing, and they were projecting what he was drawing. And the whole time, he's just talking about, you know, Japan and this and how he made Usagi and all of this. Just kind of a free flow of information. It was fascinating.
And while you're watching him draw, which is so cool.
Exactly. You
that
know?
Is awesome.
It was a ton of fun. He's an awesome guy, and I think Usagi is a wildly underappreciated comic out there in the market.
Oh, for sure. I didn't know anything about him until you guys started mentioning him. So I'm glad you did. Thank you.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And thanks for being willing to jump in on the middle. That can be a hard thing to do. So I appreciate your willingness on that.
Definitely.
Shall we jump over to our other book?
Yes.
This is Battle Cats number 5 from Mad Cave Studios, I believe it is.
Yes, Mad Cave Studios.
Mad Cave Studios. I read all 5 issues of this, kind of back to back to back to back. Maybe there's another back in there, I forget.
So you read the trade that's coming out this month, July.
Yes, and somehow it was serialized into monthly issues.
Yes.
And there were a couple of things that stood out to me as I did that. How much have you only read the 5th issue? Have you read the other issues?
No. What was weird, I read the first 3 issues. The 4th issue, when I got the 5th issue in this shipment, I realized I never received the 4th.
Okay.
And so it's something I missed, and I emailed Eric, and he has it in my next shipment coming to me. So it's weird that I read 1 through 3, missed 4, and now I'm reading 5.
All right, well, give me a second. I'll talk about 4. Okay. In the first one, I thought the group dynamic of this group was fairly quickly and effectively set up within the first couple of pages. So I appreciated that. There are quite a few pages, though, with action and no dialogue. I'm like, well, it's interesting, and you know, a beheading here or there that I could have done without, but it wasn't too gory. But then I get to the second issue, and I'm like, you know, there are quite a few pages here with action and no dialogue. And by this point, I was hoping for a little bit more Thundercats, because, well, Battle Cats, they kind of look that way.
Yeah.
But imagine if the Thundercats weren't superheroes, but like a Dungeons and Dragons group.
Yes.
That's kind of how I would say this is, and that's how they pitched it. I was just, again, hoping for a little more superheroic stuff, but, you know, my bad. Third issue, I was realizing I wanted a little bit more of the Thundercats, a little bit less of the D&D stuff, because I'm just not that into the Dungeons & Dragons fantasy stuff. But that's what they were doing here. That what I wanted in the story they were setting out to tell didn't match. Then I hit the 4th issue. And that
that's the one I missed.
That 4th issue was kind of interesting. It starts off with just background stuff in the first, like, I think it's second or third page or something. We get a 2-page map of the world. It's kind of the flashback to the origins of the Battle Cats as an organization or group or whatever.
That.
Yeah, it was when we did the Aquaman issue and they focused on King Orm or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Same sort of idea. It's like you stop the story, you tell another thing. It's good background, but it's a different story to a degree. That was kind of what I was thinking. But by this point, keep in mind, I had also just read the 4 issues of Usagi and the issue of Relay. And this was all last night as we're recording this, and I'm like, oh, I got to make sure I get through all 5. And I realized it wasn't taking me that long to get through issues 1, 2, and 3. So before I started number 4, I'm like, okay, I'm just curious. I'm not going to, like, rush through it or anything. But I pulled up the stopwatch timer application on my computer, clicked go, opened the front page, started reading. Read the thing. Okay, we get the origin, all this kind of stuff. It's kind of interesting. I'm done. Click stop. It's under 5 minutes.
Wow, that's fast.
And I was not rushing through it. And it actually, I think, was a longer read for me than some of the other issues. Because it didn't have the couple of pages of action, no dialogue. And those are usually pretty quick to go through. So I kind of like that one the best of the bunch. But then I got to this, and I'm like, I'm glad I read this in a single sitting, because I don't think this would have worked for me on a monthly basis.
Okay.
It's not a bad mini-series, but it's not as much in my wheelhouse as I was hoping it might be. It's heavy on the fantasy stuff, and that's one that, it's like I was talking the other week about when we did Thor or whatever, and when they get a little too Asgardian, a little less Earth-based, it's like, sometimes that doesn't work for me. It's a little harder for me to relate to. That was what I was having here.
All right. Well, with me, I've told you in the past, I like fantasy stuff. I love Conan growing up. So I really like these characters as far as the, you know, the action, the beheadings, the fighting with swords and stuff like that. I enjoyed all that. That was right up my alley. It did get a little bit gory sometimes. I think the artist in here is really good. Now, I went online just to see. I think this is the only thing that this writer's written and this artist has drawn in the comics medium that I could find, which I was kind of impressed with. If this is their first work, it's a pretty good go at it. But like you said, it was very decompressed. There was a lot of action scenes in those first three, I remember. The only thing that I had a problem with is when I was reading them spaced out by the months, I would remember who the characters were as far as their faces and their look. I couldn't keep the names straight at all.
I had a problem with that too.
Yeah, and it's not that they look the same. It's just when you get into those fantasy worlds, you got a guy named, I'm looking at the front to remember them, Kelthen, Kalira, Vela, Mikar, and Zoran. So when you have normal names, and I'm not telling, you know, knocking the writer for doing this, it's a different world. These are feline characters, middle-aged type looking characters, or you can't expect them to have normal names. But when you have names like that, I'm not going to remember who the heck they are. So that became confusing for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That was part of what tends to separate me from the story in these kinds of cases where it's a bit more fantasy genre or whatever. You've got terminology I'm unfamiliar with, names that don't really roll off my tongue and stuff like that. It's harder for me to kind of hook into the story that way.
Oh, yeah. And this one, when we said fantasy, it's almost like a very, I like to say low fantasy. Yeah. There's not like, they're cats, but I mean, there's not elves, they're not dwarves. There's a few creatures in here, but there's not a lot of magic. You see a lot of people in body armor, and you see a lot of hand-to-hand combat with swords and spears and maces and axes and things like that. So it gets to be brutal hand-to-hand combat when fighting does ensue.
There is some magic, because one of them is a magic wielder in the team.
That's true. That's true. My bad.
But it's almost more medieval than swords and sorceries type stuff.
Correct. Yeah, so it's like a low magic form of almost like D&D, like you said. So I kind of enjoyed that. Now, what did you think about the twist that they set up here? Because there is a Battle Cats coming out part 2 in 2019, and the trade is out in July as we're recording this. It says trade coming out in July.
Yeah, the fact that it ended up by setting up another miniseries, I was hoping for a little bit more. It had enough conclusion that I didn't feel like they were hanging up in the middle of the story and come back later. But I was hoping that it felt, I guess, more like a end of a book. And I don't know, it kind of sort of did. I was not excited that there was another one coming. How about that?
No, that makes sense. And this is, like you said, it's really not something in your wheelhouse. So I can appreciate that because the writing was decent. It was good. It wasn't like bad writing. It was decompressed, and it was a lot of action sequences, but some people like that, some don't. The art was good. For a first-time artist, this looked really, really good. I've seen a lot worse art. But like you said, it's a mini that's building up to another mini, and there's another series that they have starting up from Mad Cave Studios that's coming out soon. But this is right in my wheelhouse. This is not a really good fantasy, but it's decent fantasy. So I enjoyed it for what it was.
I would agree with that. It wasn't bad. It just didn't click with me. And there was also, in some of the issues, the coloring. And I think mm-hmm. I talked about this a few episodes back, where the color on the screen that the digital artist is seeing and the color that winds up on the page, I mean, they're the same colors, but the vibrancy is a little different and stuff like that.
Yeah, I could see that. And I noticed that with a lot of really small press independent books. They get that almost that same color palette feel. And I think it's because they haven't worked with the print medium very often.
Well, it's that. And sometimes when you've gotten like a brownish, reddish kind of a background and the fur of the particular character in it kind of matches that, everything, it feels more monochromatic than it is.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Where the one guy is like, is this reason enough for you guys? There's plenty of different colors, like the green tunic one of them's wearing or whatever, but it's got a very reddish, brownish tone to the entire page.
Exactly. Yeah, I know what you mean. So, yeah, the coloring is off on there. Now, what did you think of this artist, like their line work and stuff?
Overall, I liked it, and there were a couple of cases where I thought some of the characters were fairly expressive, particularly the one guy with the shield who's kind of, I don't want to say the goofball of the group, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We gotta say like that quick. We can't remember their names.
Yes, I cannot remember his name, but he's the one. It's like, what? I thought it was a good idea. You know, the expressiveness for him, I thought was pretty good. When we get some of them and they're, you know, baring their teeth and growling and stuff, some of that's kind of cool.
And even the armor, I thought he did a good job of drawing armor on there and giving some depth to it. Well, so I think the artist did a good job.
It's funny because I think with the armor, it looked so natural on these cats that, you know, I didn't really think much of it, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, for a first outing, I was just like, I was kind of impressed for their first outing. The only thing that was weird, I remember when they first came out, the first two issues came out in the same week, the same shipment, issues one and two.
The first one was a month late, and they caught up that way, and I don't know if that's a good idea or not. In some cases, I think it's a bad idea because the first issue is never on the rack by itself for any length of time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it feels like people have already late to the boat when they first see the title, and that's not a good thing.
Well, I tell you what, if you're going to be late, I guess it's better to do one and two at the same time versus have issue one and then wait 3 months for issue two to come out.
I would have been tempted to have kept issue five coming out when it was, tell retailers in advance, hey, we're running late on one. It's going to come out when two did, and instead of a month between, we're going to do 3 weeks between.
That would have made more sense. It would have kept the frequency a little quicker. Yeah, sped them up a little. I would have liked that. That would have been cool.
And that way, you don't have two dropping on the same week, because I really think that's a bad idea.
Yeah. But like you said, to be into this book, you have to be into a D&D, into a fantasy-type setting, and you got to be open to anthropomorphic characters. But this is the complete opposite of Stan Sakai's anthropomorphic characters, which are more cartoony. This is almost, I guess you could say realistic, grittier.
Grittier
would be the word, because it's not realistic, it's just super gritty.
I mean, these guys, one or two of them are overly musculature or whatever, but it's a darker tone. This is something that it's more of almost, if it were to be like an animated thing, it would be almost more of a dark manga kind of, you know, anime sort of a thing, not manga, but anime. Whereas you could, at a quick glance, not paying attention, you would think it's Usagi, it's like a Bugs Bunny style rabbit who's just doing a samurai kind of a deal. It's exactly. More cartoonish. This is more, again, gritty is probably the best word.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think this Mad Cape Studios, they have some good things, they have some bad things, but I mean, they're going in the right direction, and I give them two thumbs up because starting a comic book company or a publishing company in this market is very brave. And this is their first work, and I went to their website. I just pulled it up while we were talking. And there's some young guys. It's the writer is Mark London. He's writing the next series that's coming out. And the artist is Michael Camello. And then Julian Gonzalez, he's the colorist. So Julian's probably going to hopefully perfect his work when he gets used to the color palettes and stuff. But for a first outing, I was kind of impressed at the quality of what they put out.
I would agree with that. For a first comic, this was professionally done. It was better art than we see in a lot of books. It was, while the story wasn't to my liking, I don't think they have anything to be the least bit ashamed or embarrassed about. They did a good job with this, and I hope they have success moving forward. The hiccup on the release at the beginning is unfortunate, but they seem to get everything else out on time. And I appreciate that even though the first issue was delayed, they hit the deadline on all the others, including the second.
Oh, yeah. I agree. So what do you think you're going to give this one? What kind of score?
I'm between a C+ and a B-, and I'm going to probably go with the C+. At the end of the day, it didn't connect with me as much because it wasn't the right property for me as anything else. And there were just enough places over the thing where the coloring didn't quite work for me, or I couldn't get into the story. It's not bad, but, you know,
it's not for you.
It's not for me. It didn't work for me. It's something, if you're into this kind of stuff, fantasy stories and whatnot, definitely check this out. I think you'll love it.
Yeah. For me, it's kind of weird because I love fantasy. I traditionally wasn't in love with the anthropomorphic stuff, but I'm starting to like it more and more as I go along. So, I think I was kind of impressed for a first outing. I think they did a really good job. I went ahead and I picked up their next title. It's coming out. I just had Eric add it to my order. I'm not reading too much. It's called Midnight Task Force, and it's the same writer, and this is a different artist, while the other artist is going to be working on the second set of Battle Cats. And I enjoyed it. I'm into fantasy. I like the art. The writing was decent, and so I'm giving them another shot when the next Battle Cats come out, and I went with a solid B.
Cool. Let me know what you think of the other title they've got. I'm curious, but not curious enough to go get it.
Definitely. I understand. And actually, I think, Eric, I think they sent it out to the retailers. They might have a press PDF for that, so you might be able to check it out if he's able to get that to you.
Yeah, I might do that. I'll also see if they're going to be at San Diego. They may or may not be. For a small publisher, it's hard for them to justify San Diego in general.
Yeah, and I don't know how Eric knows those guys, but apparently, I didn't even know this. I told him, hey, I missed issue 4. And he's like, oh, no problem. I'm going to throw this in. I'll throw it in your order. And he shipped me out my comics today. He threw it in there, the issue 4. He's like, my oversight, my bad. I was like, no big deal. And but he's like, oh, we have a really good relationship with these guys. He's like, they get us anything we want. And he's like, they're actually probably going to come by for our next small comic thing that they have, the little show that they have up there in Conemaugh, Wisconsin. So they might be there to sign comics or give samples. Who knows?
That's cool. And hats off to these guys for deciding, hey, we want to do comics, and going and actually doing it.
It's easy very brave.
It's easy to say I'd like to. It's a lot harder to actually, you know, pull it out and do it.
Yeah, like I consider myself a brave person, but that it takes guts to go into like a tough industry like the comics industry. That takes some real guts and a real belief in yourself. And you got to be a good salesman. You got to be able to get out there and shake some hands and get yourself in front of those shop owners and stuff like that. And that's tough.
It takes guts. It takes time. It takes talent. It takes having a good story and stuff like that. And a lot of people, they've got the idea, they've got the desire, but they don't have the follow through. And I include myself in that category.
Oh, yeah. That's true. And actually, with us recording this, we're probably missing the, I guess that will have been last week, but we didn't get to review Batman number 50, but I guess I got spoiled already by the New York Times and DC.
I have not, so please don't spoil.
Oh, I didn't read it either, so I have no clue what's going on, and I will not read anything on Batman. So as soon as that comes in, that'll be the first comic I read, just so I can't be spoiled. So I'm completely spoiled for you right now.
There are various websites I just don't go to, because a time or two in, and I think it was the New York Times who actually did it also, not just spoiled it, but spoiled it in the headline for the article. That to me is unforgivable. It's like, come on, don't do that.
Yeah, and I was really surprised that DC came out with that the day before it was supposed to be released. And I guess they did it because they were afraid retailers would spoil it, but that just seems like bad logic to me.
If you've got a particular retailer that's doing that, you punish that particular retailer.
Exactly. You don't punish all the stores and all the readers by telling us what's going on before I even get my comic in my hand. And like I said, I don't know good or bad what's happening, but apparently it's something bad because Eric said retailers were really upset. I don't know if that's just about the spoiling or the story itself.
I don't know, but either way, it's to me, I want to read the story in the story. I don't want somebody to tell me kind of what happened. And as long as people are willing to kind of play ball with me, it's not hard for me to avoid spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
But
I agree.
I don't get the mindset of I know something, so I'm gonna kind of, I don't know, show off or whatever by revealing this information that will alter your viewing of a story, in some cases negligibly, in other cases substantially.
Yeah, I actually had to defriend a friend on Facebook because he was talking about what was going on in the Avengers movie before I saw the Avengers movie. I was upset. I was like, why are you doing this to me?
But I can understand that.
It's really weird. People, they like, there's some people who insist on being the first person to see a movie, or they watch all these trailers and dissect them. I really don't even want to see trailers too much. When I'm going to see the movie, whatever they happen to stick in there before I watch the show, oh well. But I don't go out of my way to even see trailers. I like to go into things fresh, with a fresh perspective.
Same here. At one point, when my sister and I would watch stuff on DVD, and this was long before we would be reviewing stuff for the podcast, she would want to start by watching the trailer.
Really?
I've broken her of the habit, thankfully. But her mindset is she wanted to see what they thought they were telling. And I'm okay watching the trailer after the film.
Yeah.
Because then you could be, wait, that wasn't in it, that wasn't in it. What the hell, they thought this was a love story? It was an action film, or, you know, whatever. Because there are a couple of times, watching the trailer or watching the deleted scenes, you could tell the movie they made, the movie they thought they were making, did not match, particularly even the movie they released.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was upset with one of the trailers. Like, I went and saw, I think it was during Avengers, I saw a trailer for, I will not say the movie, but I saw this movie last weekend, and I felt like the trailer showed all the highlights in, I mean, the movie, it was, all the highlights of the movie were in that trailer. Everything else was not very good. And yeah. I was just like, man, I wish I wouldn't have seen the trailer because the movie would have been so much better then.
I want to know enough to determine if I should go see the movie. And there are a couple of trailers I've seen where it's like, okay, that one I'm curious about that yeah. I wouldn't have seen otherwise. I wouldn't have known.
Well, and that's why I make it a point. I won't read another person's review until after I've read the comics and written down my score, like on things that we're reviewing together.
Absolutely. And that's part of why these episodes get released a week and a half after the comics are out. People have a fighting chance to read the stuff before we talk about it if they want to. If they don't, that's fine. They can certainly listen to the episode. But we've also got time codes in there to where if somebody wants to jump over, hey, I haven't read this yet, but I'm curious about that other item, they can do that.
You make it very nice for people. You're a good guy, John.
I try to be, because I used to, at a previous job, work with somebody, shared an office with this guy, and he would start conversations with spoilers.
You're like, shut up.
9 a.m.-ish, the day the issue where they killed Captain America off. Now, granted, that doesn't narrow it down. They've done it a few times. But this was ages ago. One of the big deaths.
Okay.
He started that day. This is, again, 9 a.m. before the shops have opened, 9:30-ish, whatever. Man, can you believe they killed Captain America? And
you're
I'm like,
what?
No. Oh, you haven't read it? I'm like, the store doesn't open until noon. Oh, I didn't know it was coming out today. It's like, what? You know, you could have asked if I'd read issue whatever.
Great friend there.
I said co-worker.
Co-worker. That's, you did say co-worker, not a friend.
Not a bad guy, other than that. That was bad. And not unusual.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's the worst. I always make it a point. Like, even when I get to my CrossFit gym, the guy, most of the people there, they're not comic fans, but a lot of them are Marvel movie fans or whatever, Justice League fans. And if they start talking about it, I make it a point to be like, oh, don't talk so loud. I don't think they've seen it yet. You know, the person over there, like, oh. And so they'll talk quieter because I'm like, I feel bad for, I don't want other people to get spoiled because other people want to talk about it. I try to stop them from talking about it.
When people at the office start talking like the Marvel movies or something like that, I very vocally, I have not seen that yet. Generally, they respect that.
That's good. That's good.
And I don't know if it's just because they realize that I could probably spoil the hell out of movies that haven't even come out yet because I know what the comic story did. You
it's
know?
True. Let me tell you what happens in Walking Dead.
Yeah, I can tell you pretty much everything they may do with these characters, and they may go somewhere else, but I mean, as far as spoiling stories go, I've got a ton of ammunition on that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, what's the point? Go read the story. It's fun.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm glad that delay the reviews a little bit. And like I said, I try not to read anyone's reviews or anything about the comics. I don't listen to them until I read it fresh. And then I'm like, huh. And then after I do my review, sometimes I'll go online. I'll be like, wow, they graded it way higher or way lower than I would have. But oh, well.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll read something and, oh, I didn't catch that. Or they had a very different take. And I think they're wrong. I feel they misinterpreted this or whatever. Because people are going to bring whatever baggage they have into a story, and that influences how they view it.
Exactly. So it's nice to see a different perspective. And I like to, I do listen to other reviews, but not of stuff I'm doing at the time, but just to see how they review and, you know, what they talk about. Like, everyone approaches it differently, and I like to see the different perspectives. You know, you listen to 11 o'clock comics, they might be, you know, drunk half the time, but they have like that one guy, Vince, who'll go really in depth. He'll talk for 15 minutes just about how the lines and the art is done. I'm like, that's insane how he does that.
There are some people that, man, they can recognize an inker from a mile away from their work and stuff like that. And my hat is off to people like that. Some artists I can distinguish that. A lot of them I can't. I'm not that kind of a connoisseur of the art.
Me neither.
There are others that everybody has their own thing on how they read comics, what they enjoy about it, what they like to talk about. And there's nothing right or wrong. And that's part of what I find so fascinating about the comic book podcasting space is there are so many podcasts, both now and others in the past, where it's everything from, there was one that would give you almost the emotional journey they went on as they read the comic. And I'm like, well, that's fascinating, but now I've kind of been through the journey. I don't need to read the comic. Not for me. Exactly. For other people, that's cool, whatever. It's a great podcast. Don't get me wrong. I love those guys. But it's just, there's so many different angles to come at it from. And for me, it's a matter of, I've read a lot of stuff. Sometimes I can bring some continuity, some backstory to the conversation.
And no exaggeration, no lie here. My favorite podcast for reviews was when you and Drew were doing it. You guys were the first comic book review podcast I've listened to.
Drew, and you're this way too, both of you guys have been so willing to jump in, like here in the middle of a seven-issue miniseries and stuff like that, to try new things and come at it with an open mind. Drew was great about that. You're great about it too, and I really appreciate that kind of stuff, because it's one thing to review something with somebody who's also been reading stuff forever and a day, and there's a great aspect of that too, don't get me wrong, but to be able to come at something fresh, you're going to look at it from a different angle than I am. Again, your reading of the Usagi issue we talked about, from not having read any of Usagi, much less even this story arc,
yeah,
fascinating insight. It gives me a sense of, well, I thought it was accessible. Is it really? You know, it's a vantage point that I don't have, and it's fun.
Well, that's cool. You've made it fun for me, so I've enjoyed it.
Cool. Let's see, coming up, well, San Diego Comic-Con is in the rearview mirror as this episode goes up on July 23rd.
Welcome back.
Well, actually, I don't know that I'm back yet. I think I'm still driving. Again, time travel.
Yes.
And I think the game plan, and I'm double-checking it now, is next week as this goes up, so August 1st and 3rd, is when I'll have the Comic-Con coverage up. I like to get home, recover, and then edit. And it'll be everything my sister and I did for that convention. Those episodes can go long. We usually record every evening when we get back to the hotel, of just kind of rambling about what we did for the day. It's fun. Hopefully listeners seem to enjoy that. They have in past years. And then, of course, it'll take another week or two for me to coordinate with Sam and TJ to record the July numbers, because they came out right before I will have left for San Diego, because, again, that's still in my future. Human languages don't work well with time travel.
No, they don't.
But we'll do those episodes and stuff like that. So there's plenty of good stuff coming and past simultaneously. That's kind of weird. But, yeah, we've also got the Cowabunga discussion on Skype happening on Wednesday, August 22nd, yeah, 8 p.m. Central Time.
Chat.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Always enjoy talking with those guys. Curious what people ask and what questions they have and what crazy things have happened in the industry between now we record this, now this gets released, and then when we talk with them.
Exactly. And who knows what announcements are coming out that you already know about at this time when this is aired.
When this is aired, but don't know about it this time when we record. It's so confusing.
Exactly.
We've recorded this well in advance, in case you guys can't figure that out.
Right now, it's July 3rd.
Yeah. It's not even the 4th of July yet. Jeez. And then we're going to have the deadline for the second Q&A episode. The deadline is bright and early September 2nd. That is a Sunday morning. The episode, it'll go up as episode 1500 on October 12th. That gives me time. I like to get some episodes done ahead of time when I can. It gives me a little other time to read some weeks. In theory, it hadn't worked out well on that, but I'm hoping it will in the future. Or in the past. Go take your pick. But please, we've got a thread on the forum. Put some questions up. We've already got some great ones there, but there's plenty of time. So as you think of stuff, go to the forum, put it down. I'll just go through that on the second and record that. The next preview spotlight deadline is Saturday morning, August 4th. And then the following Saturday at 7 p.m. Central Time on August 11th is the next comic book page teleconference. Looking forward to both of those. We've gotten a lot of good picks of late for the preview spotlight. A couple of things have gotten on my radar that way, which I always appreciate. And the teleconference is always just a ton of fun.
Awesome.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Injustice versus the Masters of the Universe number 1 from DC, Life of Captain Marvel number 1 from Marvel, and Aphrodite V number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.